scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now. On Sportsnet 960 The Fan, here's Pat Steinberg and Logan Gordon.
Okay, how we doing? Let's get things going. It is Wednesday, May 21st, and we're underway this hour on Flames Talk from our Groundworks downtown studio. It's Pat Steinberg and Logan Gordon along with you. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. Hello, Logo.
Hi, Patrick.
Logo with us all this week. Good to have you aboard, my friend. And look, lots to get to on the hour, and when you and I were kicking around some topics on Tuesday before Tuesday's show, just like, here's full disclosure, it's May 21st. The Flames haven't played a game since April 17th, so you know it's been a while here.
It's been a day or two,
and you're always looking for topics. You're always looking for new things to talk about and things to freshen it up. And I really like this idea from you. And we all know that Zane Parekh is the guy that probably is going to drive a lot of the narrative and drive a lot of the excitement going into next season. I think as Flames fans, Flames observers, Flames commentators, wherever we fall in that spectrum, like, we all believe Zane Parekh is going to be on the Flames next year, right? At least to start the season, unless things go alarmingly bad for Zane in training camp, after making his NHL debut on April 17th, are you of the same mind that Zane Parekh is set to start the season in the NHL next year? Is that where you're standing on the conversation?
Yes, okay. Without a doubt. There seems to be, in my mind, zero point in sending him back to the Ontario Hockey League. And until otherwise, there is no such way to get him to the Calgary Wranglers. So, yes, I fully believe he's going to be, whether he plays opening night or not,
yeah,
he's going to be on the roster.
And I believe, well, I don't believe, I know incontrovertibly that if that ends up happening, okay, here's what I know to be the truth. I know that at training camp, the Flames are going to do everything in their power to make it so Zane Parekh can succeed. I think they're going to look at training camp as an opportunity to put him in spots where he can thrive and thus put him in a spot where it's pretty clear he should make the team out of training camp. And then if when that happens, I think the Flames are going to do everything in their power to make sure the first season for Zane Parekh is a successful one in the NHL. And it's not like, look, I they've had young players make teams before, so on and so forth, but they haven't had a player of this caliber in about a decade. It's probably been since Matthew Tkachuk, since they've had a prospect of this caliber and somebody that you're this excited about. And in 2016, they weren't in the middle of a rebuild. You know, they were able to land Matthew Tkachuk because they just had a really bad season that year when the expectations were much higher. So in this case, the Flames are retooling. The Flames are reloading. The Flames are building and going younger. And now they've got this extremely exciting prospect in Parekh. So I think they're going to go out of their way to make this first season an exciting one. And I think that they want to start his path to being a franchise player this year. They want to make his rookie season as seamless as can be. And I honestly, Logo, I think they want to make sure that Zane Parekh stays in the NHL all season. They don't want to be in a situation where they might have to send him back to junior, or they might have to start to get creative in terms of the way things are. Like, do they want to send him to the World Juniors? If they had their druthers, probably not. The World Juniors is a nice thing to have as an option. But I think if the Flames had their way, Zane Parekh clearly makes the team out of camp, and Zane Parekh sticks with the team all season long. I think that's what we're talking about going into next season. And it's on Zane to take advantage of the opportunities that'll be given to him. But I think that's kind of what the mindset is as we move into September.
And I don't think it's an unfair I don't think it's an unfair expectation of Zane to take that and run with it, in the sense that you're right. How many times in the last 10 years, even if you just go off of your jumping point of, say, Matthew Tkachuk,
mm-hmm.
how many times have there been guys where we've even had the conversation about whether they should go back to junior or not? I can't really remember many of those conversations. So, yeah, I think, and also I think it's a nice landing spot, in the sense that, yes, it would be nice, and I do believe there's going to be a time where this team becomes competitive once again, but I also think it's a decent landing spot for Zane that, look, you don't have to come in here and win games for this team. Like, you're not going to be expected to come in and be the difference between a playoff team and a non-playoff team, right? I don't think when we get to September, we're talking about a team that's going to have big-time expectations put on it again, Pat, about making the playoffs. So for Zane to come into that environment and just be able to go out and play his game and learn what's going to make him successful at this level, I think allows the Flames to do some more unique things with him to make it a better landing spot.
Well, and so that is kind of the main talking point of this segment. So if that's all true, and if that's how the Flames are going to approach things, and I fully believe that is how they're going to approach things, what goes into making sure season one in the NHL for Zane Parekh is a success? Assuming he does what it takes to make the team and he's an NHLer in October when the Flames open the season against whoever they open with, we'll find out the schedule in a few weeks. What goes into making sure, or what goes into from a Flame standpoint, from a coaching staff management standpoint, you know, doing what you can to, you can never guarantee these things, but to put them in the best possible spot to succeed. And I think there's kind of three things that play into it for me, right? Like, kind of just right off the top of my head. I think that you have the opportunity for a guy that is still learning the NHL game, and a guy that, you know, we all know that there's some defensive parts of his game that need improvement. So I think you need to make sure you shelter him or use him smartly at 5-on-5. I think you got to give him a lot of power play time and really play to his strengths. And I think you got to find him the right defense partner. I think you need to put him with the right guy and have a really good idea going into training camp who the best fit might be style-wise for a guy like Zane Parekh. So for me, three things that come to mind right away are sheltered 5-on-5 time, lots of power play time, and the right defense partner at 5-on-5. Those are kind of the three things that I think about in terms of ensuring Zane Parekh has a positive first season in the NHL.
Yeah, I think all of those make sense. I think you have to understand a bit about what you have. And I know for some it might seem like an unearned opportunity to jump in on a power play in your first NHL season, but that's what Zane's been known for. And I also think, you know, and I hate to bring this up because I also think that this was something that got overblown last season. I think you have to, and I'm not saying you have to change the entirety of the team, the way that the team plays, like the style of play, Pat.
Right.
But I think there has to be a level of letting Zane do the things that make him successful. And if that, in some people's mind, is getting more of a green light from the back end to allow them to jump into plays, to be a guy that, you know, isn't just getting the puck out of the zone, but is maybe leading a rush, right? We've seen Zane do that an awful lot during his time in Saginaw. Is sometimes he's the first guy out of the zone and willing to take the puck. I know he's a good puck mover, but is there a way that the Flames and the coaching staff with Ryan Huska and company can let the defenseman have more of a green light to be creative offensively? I know it's a very defensive-heavy scheme, and they're trying to make sure that their own zone's taken care of, and I think all of that's important, but I also think you can't put too many shackles on what makes a player like Zane special. So to me, that would be the only thing I would kind of add on to the points that you had, is
right.
Maybe a little bit of a stylistic or maybe a philosophical understanding of what your defensemen are allowed to do in the play.
I want to read you this text. It's from Danica in Lethbridge. She says, feels like Parekh could be in the same spot Lane Hutson was for Montreal this past season. High expectations, but on a team with lower overall expectations, so time to get comfortable. That's from Danica in Lethbridge at 960-960. Text line's open if you want to jump in on this conversation if you're listening live, and if you're listening on the podcast. Thanks for being with us as well. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get them. And the reason I read that text is because that's exactly where I was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Lane Hutson is a perfect example of how the Flames could be using or could use Zane Parekh this season, and the way they could shelter him. And the way the Habs did it in Lane Hutson's first full NHL season, he had two games last season. And this year, of course, is a Calder Trophy finalist. Damn, I think we all believe he's going to win the Calder Trophy. Well, Zane Parekh had one game this season. Can he make the jump to 82 or a full-time NHLer next year? That's what we're all hoping and what the conversation's about. So I went and I looked. So the three things that we talked about, and you kind of added on a little bit in terms of, hey, just don't neuter the guy. Let this guy be able to have the green light and let this guy still be able to do the things that he can do. But I talked about sheltering him at 5-on-5. I talked about lots of power play time, and I talked about the right D partner. Well, the Habs definitely sheltered Hutson at 5-on-5. He had a 66.2% offensive zone start, so way more offensive starts compared to defensive starts, which makes sense for an offensively charged defenseman who's learning the other side of the game. He averaged 3 minutes and 33 seconds of power play time per game. That was number two on the Habs behind only Nick Suzuki and number one amongst defensemen. So he was their most used power play defenseman logo. And his most consistent D partner was a veteran in Mike Matheson. And it was about just under 500 minutes. He played with a bunch of different guys, played some time with Gooley.
Yeah, some with Gooley at the end of the season.
Towards the end of the year, into the playoffs, yeah. It was Gooley. But in the first half of the season, he played a lot with Matheson, who's with him and Savard, kind of the veteran guy back there on that back end. So those are kind of the three things that Montreal did that really jumped off the page to me when it comes to Hutson. And I don't see why the Flames couldn't do something similar with Parekh this year. The zone start thing, simple enough. Guys get sheltered all the time in this league, and Parekh, I think, at the age of 19 would be the perfect guy that you'd want to make sure that you're not putting in too many tough situations. It's not like you're sitting there with a Erik Karlsson or Cale Makar type power play one quarterback, and with no disrespect to Mackenzie Weegar, Weegar's done a fine job as this team's power play one guy, but he's not a natural power play one quarterback. That's what Zane Parekh projects to. If I'm the Flames, I'm putting that guy in power play time immediately, and maybe he starts on power play two with an eye to getting him to power play one. But logo in training camp, I am force-feeding Parekh as much power play one time as I possibly can. I am getting them power play one time in the preseason. In preseason games 7 and 8, when you're basically rolling out full meal deal lineups, I'm putting them in that number one power play spot with Huberdeau and Coronado and Kadri and the power play one group that you're used to. Like, why not give this guy as much power play time as you can possibly feed him? So those are two things that I think the Flames will be able to do right off the get-go if they want to.
Yeah, it's a really interesting conversation because I think it's part of it is just not overthinking things to me, right? It shouldn't be a lot of, okay, well, we need Zane to be better defensively, so here's penalty kill time, right? It's kind of just playing to your strengths and knowing where a guy is going to be successful. You mentioned Cale Makar. Well, you go to Natural Stat Trick and you see, look at where his offensive zone starts have been throughout his entire career. Going back to 2019-20, he's been over 60% his entire career. Last year was his highest. 70% of the time, Cale Makar was getting offensive zone starts. Well, of course he is.
Karlsson was the same way.
Exactly. And yes, those are big names to be putting around a Zane Parekh.
But these are the guys that he's being compared to, and these are the numbers that he'll enter the NHL with.
Well, and if you want him to be one of those guys, or you think he can be in the same breath as those guys, do what those teams do with those players, right? If you think he can be a Carlson, a McCarr light, Bouchard, whatever you want to say, look at how those teams use them and try to mimic it in the best possible way that you can. I think that's exactly what you need to do if you're the Calgary Flames, and understanding that, yeah, there are guys that situationally you're going to have to start in different places, and that's part of, you know, the chess match of a head coach and last change at home, all those sort of things. Are there going to be times where Zane gets stuck out on the road or on an icing call? Sure. But it's on you to put him in those spots as often as you can that lead to the strong suits of his game.
I'm just going to take a look at the so last year on the Habs, just looking at Lane Hutson and the way things played out, and same with Erik Karlsson when it comes to the zone start conversation. So, I mean, you take a look at Karlsson over the course of his career, like we're talking about a guy that has been 58%, 58%, 59%, 64% the year that he had 100 points with the San Jose Sharks. I mean, that's playing to a guy's strength. You just laid out the conversation about Cale Makar. That's playing to a guy's strength. That's what you want to do. So I don't think sheltering a guy with a ton of ozone starts and feeding him power play time, that's who. I'll never forget Zane Parekh on the draft floor at Sphere Las Vegas sitting down with me for one of his first interviews, and he was kind of interviewing me, and you're just like, this, first of all, you're like, okay, well, this guy's pretty engaging. And I remember saying, like, hey, you know, people talk about how, and you've already mentioned that, you know, you need to make some improvements when it comes to your defensive game. He said, yeah, I do. And I'm going to work on it. And it's something that I'll be working on all season long. But they didn't draft me to play defense. They didn't draft me to shut guys down. They drafted me to put up points. And that's, yeah, it's confident, and yeah, it's swaggy, but it's the truth.
It's also accurate.
It's fully accurate. That's why they drafted him, because he's a potential 70, 80, 90-point defenseman in the NHL if it all hits the way the Flames and Zane want it to.
Yeah, if you want somebody to go and shut down the other team's top line and be a beast on the penalty kill, then either go draft that guy or go get that guy in free agency. You don't have to be all things in every situation.
Yeah.
Right? In fact, most defensemen aren't in those situations. I would say there are very few guys, Pat. I think the initial name that comes to mind right now that I see capable in both ends that kind of comes to mind, like a Victor Hedman, right? Probably a guy that gets power play one and PK one type responsibility,
right?
Sees top line, defensive shifts, all that sort of stuff. I believe that's the type of guy that I would think of in that situation. But there are plenty of guys that are considered top defensemen and point producers in the league that are, you know, more to the offensive zone side of things and aren't a shutdown player. And that's okay. That's why you have other people on your team and other defensemen to go and do those things. What number did you see for Lane Hutson on offensive zone starts?
He's up over 66% on the ratio.
So Hockey Reference, I had at 66.7. So that's where I think he should be.
I have 66.2. So Natural Stat Trick and
Hockey Reference,
they're off by like three. They're off by three draws.
And Lane Hutson still played, what, 22 minutes this year?
Yeah. Hutson, 554 offensive zone faceoffs at 5-on-5, 283 defensive zone faceoffs.
Yeah, so we're right around that 66% mark anyway.
So like this, they made sure that they put him in the best situations to succeed. And you know what? Maybe in 2 years' time, 4 years' time, we're talking about a guy that you're like Miro Heiskanen, you can put him anywhere you want and you're comfortable.
Sure.
And maybe that's in 2 or 3 years' time what we're talking about with Hutton, or 3 or 4 years' time, that's what we're talking about with Parekh. But to start things off, feed him the ozone.
It's been 5 years for Makar, and I just told you he's never been under 60% his entire career in the NHL.
And Cale Makar,
so maybe it never changes. Maybe
Cale
it doesn't
Makar's
become
the gold standard.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't become a 50-50 thing where he sees equal time, and I guess it's not entirely equal because you got three zones you can start in. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right? It's more evenly split between offensive zone time and defensive zone starts. maybe it does get to that point. But if it doesn't, there are still plenty of guys who see the offensive zone time well above half of their night and do very well with it.
Quinn Hughes, 505 O-zone faceoffs, 283 D-zone faceoffs. And you're not worried about you're fine putting
Perfect.
Quinn Hughes in
sure.
any situation. You're still feeding him more O-zone faceoffs because he can help you that much more
yep.
if you're doing so,
yep.
right? It's not like he's not a pure shutdown defenseman. He's a guy that can impact you all over the ice. So what's the most important part of this game? Yeah, I know that we all talk about defense wins championships, all that type of stuff.
Tell that to the Oilers.
Guys, in 2025, I don't know if defense is the one thing that wins championships anymore. I don't even know if goaltending is the thing that wins championships anymore.
Like, can you put the puck in the net more than the other guys?
That's why Florida's going to beat Carolina in round three, I think.
Yeah.
Because
that's why the Islanders in 2020 and 2021 made it all the way to the conference final and learned that, yeah, the Tampa Bay Lightning score more goals than we do, and we lose.
And you can win a couple of rounds, but I think the difference becomes, do you have the elite guys that can score at the right time and score over the course of a series at a higher rate? And I think that has turned into the real differentiating factor between teams right now. So the final part of the equation then becomes, Logo, who is the best D partner for next season for Zane Parekh? And I mean, as we talked about, Hudson started with Matheson, ended with Gouley, had a couple of other partners throughout the season, played some time with Savard, played some time with a couple of other guys, but mostly it was Matheson, and then by the end it was Gouley. The guy he played with, Parekh played with in Game 82 in Los Angeles, was Kevin Paul, and I think there is plenty of reason to like that future fit. Ball, left side guy, natural left side defender, plays a real stay at home game.
Yeah, probably not a problem if he lets Zane take the puck up the ice instead of himself.
Yeah, like if he's deferring to Zane Parekh to lead rushes, I think that's probably okay.
Fine, go kid.
Ball to me feels like the most natural fit. Like if you back me up against a wall, say Steinberg, who should be Parekh's D partner? I say Ball. I don't really hesitate. I go Kevin Ball. And I know that Ball and Anderson essentially played every shift together when they were healthy this season. We don't know what's going to happen with Rasmus Anderson.
No, we're projecting a bit because we don't know who is all going to be in camp. But for guys that we're pretty sure are going to be there.
And you can play Raz with other people, too. He's a pretty good defenseman. He's captaining mm-hmm. Sweden's team. I know he had a down year, and I know we don't know. But he's still a pretty good defenseman in this league. So you don't have to play him with Ball all season. But there's a really good option. But maybe Rasmus Anderson is here. And maybe Ryan Huska really likes the idea of, again, having that set-and-forget pairing of Anderson and Ball. And maybe they don't re-sign Joel Hanley, and Mackenzie Weegar needs a partner. I really don't love having Weegar play his off-wing or his offside.
Exact same.
But for the first half of the season, like Mike Matheson and Lane Hudson both left shots. Could you go Parekh and Weegar both right shots and have Weegar playing the left side? If you had to, and you really felt like Parekh could play top 4 minutes right off the bat and you wanted to keep Anderson and Ball together, I would be okay with moving Weegar back to the left and playing Parekh on the right. And it was Weegar who had the 3-hour conversation with Zane Parekh at the end of the season, right?
I spent some time overseas with Canada together,
yep.
right? The Flames
yep.
have thrown that picture out on social media. The only reason I would hesitate against Weegar being the guy, Pat, is if we are talking about a Flames team that adapts a similar model that other teams have with elite offensive young defensemen in the league, is I think Mackenzie Weegar then has to be on your shutdown pair.
Yeah, he's too important to be sheltering.
Yeah, I don't think Mackenzie Weegar, I think at least given the names that we think are going to be on the team heading into September right now, I would look at Mackenzie Weegar and say, okay, when I need a stop or when I'm in a bad spot and I need somebody.
If we're up a goal in the third period and the McKinnon line's coming out, who you putting out
there? I want Mackenzie to go out there, but at the same time, as we just talked about, I probably don't want to put Zane in those same spots that I'm putting Mackenzie in. So, and also I think that there's a bit of, you know, with Kevin Ball, not that I'm going to say he's never going to shoot the puck or is never going to contribute offensively, but Mackenzie does a lot of that and can kind of spread that wealth a bit. right into other pairings too.
Right.
That when he gets offensive zone starts or gets chances in the offensive zone, it's not just coming from one D pairing in particular. And I'm also with you. My biggest gripe about Mackenzie Weegar's usage is I've noticed, and I think I see a big difference when Mackenzie plays on his right to his left. I don't think he's bad on his left by any means, but I think it's a completely different game. As Megan Mickelson has told us so many times, it's you're playing backwards, essentially, and it's a very hard transition. Now, some guys like him make it look pretty easy, but I would still prefer him to be on the right. And I think Ball's game bodes pretty well. And, I mean, Kevin's been around for a couple of years now. Right, he's got some time to be in Calgary. He grew up in the New Jersey system.
That's two straight full seasons now in the NHL for Ball.
So if he was a little younger, I might hesitate to that because I do like what you mentioned, the Matheson, you know, sort of seniority role with Lane Hudson made sense to me. But I think I see too many obstacles as to why Weegar and Parekh would work. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see Zane with a couple of different defensive partners in training camp just to get a feel for it.
For sure. And I think you want to see a bunch of them. You know, if he's going to be playing third pairing minutes, Jake Bean would probably be who that guy would be on the left side. Or is there another left side defender that we see the Flames bringing into the fold? I mean, I guess you also have guys like Kuznetsov
Soloviev. Or
Soloviev, stuff like that. But is there a younger left side defenseman the Flames could bring into the organization between now and the start of next season? I think of Nick Hag in Vegas. You know, if Vegas is going to go after Mitch Marner, they're going to need to make some room. Could the Flames pry a guy? I love the way Nick Hag plays. He plays with size. He is a imposing figure. He can skate. He obviously has been through the playoff grinds before, and he's still young. He's about 25 years old. I think if you were to say, give me a number one target on defense for the Flames to go out and get this year, Nick Hag would be it for me in a trade. I really like Matias Samuelsson in Buffalo, and they might have to part with one of their guys if they're going to be signing Bowen Byram to a long-term deal.
And, I mean, another guy in Buffalo that continues to get talk is Bowen Byram, right? He's been on Elliott's tongue recently on 32 Thoughts. As to whether or not that's a long-term solution.
I'd have no problem if they went out and got Byram either. If they're going to sign Byram and they have to give up Samuelsson, well, then maybe Samuelsson's the guy.
That works, too.
I just think that there are some left-side defensemen out there that you could say, hey, that'd be a nice addition for the Flames and could end up also being a fit with Zane Parekh. Text line at 960-960. We'll get to the texts in just a second. But I want to play you this because the head coach of the Calgary Flames, Ryan Huska, is over with Team Canada at the World Championship in Sweden. And a little earlier this week, caught up with our Aaron Vickers. Aaron Vickers covering the World Championship in Sweden and Denmark for NHL.com, helping us out with some content as well. Caught up with the head coach and talked a little bit about Zane Parekh, talked a little bit about Parekh and why it was such a big opportunity for him to be with Team Canada for the pre-tournament and leading up to the games. He did not play any actual preliminary round games, but did get into a pair of pre-tournament games for Team Canada. And Ryan Huska talked a little bit about that with Aaron Vickers in Sweden.
He has an opportunity to be around a different type of player maybe than the guys that he got used to being around in Calgary. Unfortunately, at that time, Sid wasn't there, McKinnon wasn't there, but Celebrini was, and you have Fantilli, and you have all the other young players that were there. So I guess for me, I was hopeful that he kind of did a lot of watching and trying to evaluate and really pay attention to what they look like on and off the ice, because those are the kind of the young stars in the game where they do things the right way, and you can... It was very evident right from day one in training camp. So I hope he picked some of that stuff up. And he was around a different coaching staff. And to me, that's the other thing. So Dean's got a very different style than I would have. So it gives him an opportunity to see how different coaches are.
I'm sure he caught wind, but I think it was the day after the end of the regular season. Weegar and him had about a three-hour conversation. And how important is that to have a vet bring in a young guy like that and sort of, hey, this is how we do things in Calgary?
Yeah, very important. Mackenzie is, we've talked a lot over the course of the year about the leadership that he's brought to the table this year for us, and I think he really gets it now. That's the one thing with Mackenzie. He understands where he's at with his career, and he understands the responsibility that he bears with our team, and a big part of that is helping bring people along. So I think he recognizes the caliber of player that Zane is, and I think he was trying to do everything or anything he can to help him, one, feel comfortable, but two, probably give him a few tips and suggestions to help him come along. So he's coming to camp next year, and he's going to do everything he can to make our team out of camp.
For McKenzie, he's a guy that didn't make the Four Nations. He's here in part to keep his name in the conversation, yeah. Be front and center.
Yeah.
How do you see him handle all that? Because that can be very disappointing for a guy.
Yeah, not being on the Four Nations.
Yeah.
He wanted it. Like, he really wanted to be a part of that team for sure, but that's where his maturity has, for me, over the last 3 years, seeing that, like, he won't even let it really, or he won't show you that it's bothering him. I mean, I think that's where he's grown up a lot. So he'd tell you right to your face, like, yeah, I'm disappointed. I would have loved to have been on that team. I would have given anything to play on that team, but I still got to play hockey now and try to make my way onto other teams and help our team win. So that's one of the things that I love about him. There's no fluff, there's no kicking stones, there's nothing like that. It's just about, yep, I wish I was there, but I'm not, so I'm going to be at my best here tonight for our team.
What does this experience do for you as a coach?
So many great things for me. I mean, I get to, my role is way different here, so I get to do a stand on the bench and watch how Dean runs a bench. I get to watch how Sidney Crosby is with his teammates, so all the little things from practice to watching him in meetings, how pays attention to every little detail that's going on. There's so many things that I'll take out of this. I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be here because of the experiences that I'll be able to bring back. I love it.
You're also getting the opportunity to represent Canada.
Yeah.
That's probably not lost.
Oh, my God, no. And that's the thing. When you catch wind that maybe you might get an opportunity to come, it's a pretty good consolation prize to represent your country in this event. So I found out fairly quickly it's a spectacular tournament.
That is head coach Ryan Huska of the Calgary Flames, an assistant on Dean Evason's staff with Team Canada at the World Championship as they get set for their game against Denmark in the quarterfinals on Thursday at the World Championship. And you heard him talk about Zane Parekh. You heard him talk about that relationship with Mackenzie Weegar in that conversation. So let's hit to the text line now at 960-960. Chris says, can you please clarify what would happen if Zane Parekh plays 10 or more games for the Flames next season? Would doing so make him ineligible for juniors? And if so, could he then play for the Wranglers since he couldn't go to juniors? So here's the deal. Only thing that would happen if Zane Parekh plays more than 9 NHL games this year is that it would burn the first year of his entry-level contract. That's it. That's all. At no point during the season will he be eligible to play in the American League until the Flames season or the Ontario League season is done, depending on where Zane plays. And at any point, if the Flames choose, they could send him to the World Juniors if they wanted to. So there's not any ineligibility that comes with playing more than 9 NHL games. All it is for contract purposes. This reads, it's the NHL. He can dangle in the OHL, but doing it in the best league in the world will be different. No doubt. Nobody's suggesting that it's going to be easy for Zane to be the same guy in the NHL as he was in the OHL, but it wasn't easy for a lot of the other guys we're talking about. You know, Cale Makar, it's not like it was easy, but he was able to do it and able to do it almost right away. Lane Hutson, it's not like he just closed his eye and did a lot of work goes into it, but these guys are high-level athletes and highly touted prospects for a reason. And honestly, Logo, I know it was game 82, but I thought Zane Hutson looked like he could do a lot of the things that you want to see him do in the NHL against players like Anze Kopitar and Kevin Fiala and Quentin Byfield and more. I thought he translated just fine in that. It's a very three periods of work. I get it, but played pretty well.
Yeah, it's we'll see, but that's why these guys get compared to the best that have done it, right? There's always that level of doubt. There was that level of doubt for Celebrini and Bedard and all these other guys about whether, you know, what they could do would transfer. The best find a way, always. And there's a reason that these players get held in high regard, and there's a level of certainty that the organizations have when drafting these players that what they're doing can translate to a pro game.
Mike and Shaughnessy says Zane's the next Cale Makar. I don't want to put those types of expectations on him, but I think he could be the next really good defenseman on the Flames. Greg in Edmonton says, outside of Zane and Hunter, do you see Hunter Brustevich? Do you see any other prospect D getting a taste of the league next year? I think Kuznetsov, Solovyov, Grushnikov, any one of those three could get an opportunity. I think it's a big year for Jeremy Poirier in the organization, so I don't know if I'd put him in that same category. This says Parekh with Ball and the newly acquired Bowen Byram with Uyghur next season. I don't mind that. Now, there's a big step that's missing there, going and making sure that he's newly acquired, but I don't mind that as a top four if you're the Flames. Keep Bean and Pahal together. Boom, there's your... You've got it. Your top six is set for next season, Logo.
It's that easy. Right, Craig? It's that easy.
I think so.
Yeah, I believe so.
Derek says, I could see the Flames modeling Parekh's season after Hudson's season, but also a little bit like Leo Carlson's first year, and that goes into kind of the load management side of things. What else we got here at 960 as we continue along? It's Steinberg and Logan along with you on this
Seems
hour.
As though you said Zane Hudson at some point.
Did I say Zane Hudson?
Apparently.
Oh, no. He speaks this is for...
Zane Lane.
Speaks for 2 hours a day. He made a mistake. We better call him out on it.
I mean, that was Shan calling you out about it, but...
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Pretty rude.
What else we got here at 960? Do you use free agency to pick up a D partner to protect and isolate the skills of Parekh? Not necessarily.
I'm kind
of
looking, and boy, there aren't many options I like.
Well, and I wanted to add one more to the prospect side of things. Somebody, Javon and Erdry says, don't forget Etienne Morin. You know, maybe that's another name. Going to the Memorial Cup with the Moncton Wildcats, winning a QMJHL championship and having a massively important bounce back season with the Flames. That's important. I think Morin could be a guy who gets a look as well because he will be eligible to play American League action next year.
Gosh, there are no free agent D left players I really like. Ryan Suter's 40.
Yeah, no thanks.
Grizzlick, Forbert, Megna, Merrill.
Use your internal people. That's what I would say.
Yeah, there's probably better use of your money than Jack Johnson making banana pancakes in Columbus.
Oh, staple it together and call it bad weather. You know, I really like Jack Johnson for a time, the singer.
Oh.
As a defender, he seems like a great guy, but the hockey player seems like a great guy. But the singing guy, the flip-flops guy, I used to really like his music, and then you're like, Now if I hear it, I'm like, yeah, okay, next song, change.
All I'll say is just that it's better when we're together, Pat.
Good song, but like...
You never know.
I don't really want to hear it again.
You never know.
Okay.
Just sitting here waiting, wishing.
You have the album list in front of you now.
No, I don't.
You do so.
I have Jack Johnson on my phone.
He has it in front of him? Oh, okay. Good on you. Well done. I like your bubbly toes. It's a different album. It's Steinberg and Logo. We're underway this hour. Text line remains open at 960-960. Yes, I said Zane Hudson. Do we need seven texts about
text it? Text him more.
Holy.
Text him more.
Hey,
text him more.
Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg and Logo on this Wednesday edition of the program. And, hey, pretty cool springtime chance for 2023 first-round pick Sam Hanzek. as he just wrapped up his first ever world championship with Team Slovakia. Slovakia finishes sixth in Group A. They do not advance to the medal round, but they avoid relegation, so they will remain in the championship group for another year.
I had big money on the Slovaks.
Then they won two games when it was all said and done. First time for Hanzek, though, representing his country at the highest level, or the senior men's level. He's been a world junior guy before. He's been in other events for Slovakia, but he's never represented the senior men's team before until this year. A big opportunity for him going up against teams like Canada and Sweden. And yet, honestly, he'll probably be on the Olympic team as well. Like, you can pretty much pen in Hanzek on Slovakia at the Olympics, I would think. I mean, there's, what, three or four guys who played NHL games from Slovakia this past year. Probably Hanzek's going to be on the Olympic team in Milan. And yet a lot of Flames fans, and I don't want to speak for everybody, but there's definitely a, you know, I've seen it before on social media.
Oh, yeah.
When Wes and I went through our top 10 prospects a couple weeks ago, we both had Hanzek on there, and there was lots of, what is that guy doing on your top 10? So on and so forth. There are some Flames fans who do not look at Hanzek as a highly touted prospect or a guy that they rate highly. And we'll get into that in a second, but first let's check in with him. He's now done at the World Championship after playing for Team Slovakia for the first time at the senior men's level, and he caught up with our Aaron Vickers, our Flames Talk World Championship correspondent. Here is Sam Hanzek from earlier this week with Aaron Vickers.
For you, what's it like pulling on the jersey? I know you've done it before, but doing it at the men's level is another level.
It's different, right? Like, it's every time is the you have one chance to represent your country, like, first time. So it's always a great memory, and, you know, it's hard. You know, kind of see the other teams, like the good teams, that how they play. Even, like, you know, smaller, like, not successful countries are really competitive, right? And I mean, overall, it's pretty hard. So it's a great experience.
When did you know you were coming?
Right after basically we got out with the Wranglers, they just called me next day and like, hey, like, do you want to come? Do you want to represent? And I said, yeah, of course, I really want to come. So that's how it happened.
You talk about, you know, getting the opportunity and getting to see some of the other countries. And what does a tournament like this do for a development standpoint for you?
I mean, it's like, I would say, like, the games are, you know, you can't do mistakes, right? And it's basically, I would say, maybe same as NHL, right? Like, you have to play the system, you have to play the right way, and, you know, play good hockey and, you know, bring your best, right? Because you have one game against each team, and that's kind of what NHL is all about.
How do you look at your season as a whole? As a first-year pro, there's obviously a lot of learning. Training camp, phenomenal. You got some NHL games, and then it became a bit of a learning curve, I think.
I would say, yeah. The whole season was learning, I would say, from my point of view. You know, start with NHL, got sent down, then finish with this. You know, it's lots of, I don't want to say up and downs, but a lot of experience and learning, you know, how the things are. And I feel like, you know, I learned a lot, and I think I know how to use everything I learned and prepare for next season.
With that, how much more prepared do you feel for year two as a pro and maybe challenge for more time with the
Flames? It's definitely, I would say, even being here, it's really, really, again, I don't want to say learn, because let's say on my exit meeting they told me what to do better, and maybe now I can focus on that stuff, right, starting from this point, right, and then just bring it to the off season and, you know, get ready for the camp and, you know, bring my best again.
What were some of those things that they wanted you to work on for training camp next year?
I would say the main thing was winning my pack battles, right? Kind of don't cheat, and kind of like don't cheat the game, and, you know, winning the puck battles. You know, that's where I can take a puck and make a place from there, and, you know, create some offense, right? So so yeah, that was the big point. And then, you know, I think I had my chances during the season. Unfortunately, it wouldn't go in, but still, like I said, I would say progress and lots of learning.
That is Sam Hanzek with Aaron Vickers in Sweden at the World Championship a little earlier this week. Is Hanzek representing Slovakia for the first time at the World Championship level. Their tournament is now done after seven preliminary or round-robin games. They do not advance to the medal round, finishing number six in Group A. But, Logo, why do you think we're talking about a lot of Flames fans maybe not being super high on Hanzek? He's a first-round pick from 2023, and I get it that he's never been a big point producer, and things have been, I think it's fair to say, aside from the surprise that he was in training camp this past season, since being drafted a couple of years ago, I think it's been pretty underwhelming since. His first season as a member of the organization, injury plagued, and didn't put up a ton of points as a member of the Vancouver Giants. This year, makes the Flames out of training camp, then gets hurt, and then, you know, there was definitely some adjustment and learning curve that went on with the Wranglers in the American League. Don't know if he has jumped off the page for a lot of people since being drafted. And so I get why that might have some starting to wonder exactly what the Flames have in this player. He's never been a big point producer at any level. Like, we're not talking about a guy who put up, even in his draft year, a massive amount of points with the Giants in the Western League. I don't know. I still, for the way the Flames have drafted under Craig Conroy, I've been very impressed with that. So I still hold out lots of hope for what Hanzek could be. And also, they don't have a lot of guys in the system with a 6'4" frame and the ability to put on a whole lot more size and strength going into the next couple of seasons. I still think there's a really raw talent in Hanzek. And because of that, after two seasons where injuries have been a big problem, I'm not ready to sit here and say that, you know, he's not going to be this or not going to be that.
I think there's a couple reasons, going back to your original question, as to why I think there's frustration among some in the Flames fan base with Sam Hanzik. And I think part of it is, one is, I don't think he's very flashy, right? I don't think there's a lot of highlight reel moments for Sam Hanzik. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think that there's sometimes just not a lot of flash to his game. Winning puck battles and using your size and frame, winning faceoff, that's all important stuff too. So I don't put that into everything. I also think that in a lot of ways, Pat, the last decade or so has produced some really fast risers when it comes to first round picks in the Flames organization. And I think for some people, that's shortened their patience when it comes for prospect development. There's really only a small handful of, you know, look, he's one of the higher picks in Flames history, right? They've never picked number one, top 15 from there. I look at some of the names and I immediately think that's why Flames fans are that way. I look at, obviously, Matt Coronato, 13th overall, 2021. Mm-hmm. You knew he wasn't going to join right away, coming out of the USHL and then going the college route for a little bit. So you knew there was a little bit of wait time, but there was a lot of excitement there. Zane Parekh was 9th overall last year. There was immediate buzz around Zane. And also, going back to my original point, I think also very flashy. And then I think in the
very
last...
much so.
And in the last decade or so, I look at Matthew Tkachuk, I look at Sean Monahan. I guess Monahan and Bennett, you're going a little bit further back, closer to 10, 12 years since those guys got drafted.
Holy
now.
Cow.
Yeah, it's frightening. But Monahan and Tkachuk both made the team after they got drafted, which is
honestly,
norm.
Bennett would have too, I think.
Exactly.
Had he not been injured.
But then when did he come in?
Playoffs. That
and
same year.
Made a pretty big splash when he showed up wearing number 63. This young, you know, now baby-faced Sam Bennett coming in. So I really think that for a lot of people, the norm became, if there's not massive hype around a guy or he's not on the roster day one, something must be wrong. Why did those guys make the team right away, but Sam Hanzik didn't? And I think part of it is there's just a development curve that's everybody's different. You can't just say first round pick, they're all going to do it the same way and it's all going to look the same, because it's not. And even if it takes Sam Hanzik 2 or 3 years extra than it did Tkachuk or Bennett or any of these guys you want to talk about, that's still okay. Like, that's not a problem. I think it's just generally, and also I think part of it is too, sometimes you see a struggling team, Pat, and a team that, you know, maybe could use some help down the middle at times. And you go, man, wouldn't it be great if we had a prospect that was ready to come in and fill those boots right away? Because
right.
It has happened before for this team. And we kind of default to that. And you kind of get, I don't know, I'm not saying everybody wants to cut corners, but sometimes you do. right? Sometimes you want to fast track it as much as you can. You don't want the growing pains, right? You just want the finished product. But sometimes it takes a little bit for the finished product to show up. And that's how I view Sam Hanzik in a lot of ways. Just because he hasn't jumped on the scene right away or given you a lot of reasons to share highlights with the Wranglers, with your buddies this year and go, man, I can't wait till Hanzik jumps in the Flames lineup, doesn't mean there isn't reason to be excited about him.
Let me give you a few examples of other guys with similar frames. So we're talking about Hanzik with a 6'4" frame. And I think that we're talking about a guy that can add a good 5, 10, 12, 13 pounds to that frame. If he continues working with...
If he trains with you, absolutely.
Well, don't train with me. Train with Rick. Have you ever seen Rick? Rick Davis, the strength and conditioning guru.
Rick Ball?
At the Flames. Rick Ball. Rick Davis, yeah, train with that guy. If you want to add size and strength, train with Rick. And the rest of the strength guys at the Flames. Rick's crew is outstanding. Anyway, but like I think if he continues working with Danielle Fujita on his skating, mm-hmm. which he will, and we know the results that she gets with players, it's like a hey, you work with DF and you're going to end up being a much better skater.
Oh, yeah, Matt Coronado didn't get any better at skating by hanging out with Danielle.
You name it. Michael Stone, Matt Coronado, like you talk to anybody who's worked with her, they get better in their skating. They just do. But let me give you a few names of guys, similar frames, that took a little bit of time. And if the Flames end up getting any one of these players or something close to any one of these players from Sam Hanzik, I think you're happy with the 16th overall pick. I think of Nick Paul, Tage Thompson, Valerie Nichushkin, Mason Marchment, Drake Batherson, and Sean Couturier. All of them 6'3", 6'4". All of them have the ability to play kind of that power forward-ish role, and all of them took some time to get to being what they are in the NHL. I mean, it's only been the last 2 or 3 years that Nick Paul's been anything in the NHL, and now he's like a 40-point guy, 45-point guy. We know what Couturier, and I know Couturier of late has struggled on the injury side of things, but there was a little while there where Sean Couturier was a Selke Trophy guy every single year with how important he was to the Flyers. Look what Mason Marchment took forever to turn into anything as an undrafted guy, and now he's a big part of what the Dallas Stars are doing. Nichushkin was a sixth overall pick, and it took Nichushkin forever. He went back to Russia before he turned into anything in the NHL, and now he is a dominant player with the Colorado Avalanche. And Tage Thompson looked like he was going to be nothing in the St. Louis Blues organization.
I think he won a Selkie, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, I believe he did. Tage Thompson looked like he was going to be nothing in the NHL, and now look at him. He's a 40-goal threat every year. So I just and if the Flames get any one of those guys or close to any one of those guys, and they're differing calibers, differing impact levels, but they're all full-time players in the NHL, and it took some time. Guys with that type of frame sometimes, a lot of times, take a little bit longer to turn into what they are, and there's a little bit more of an unpolished element to them sometimes. I'm not saying Hanzik's going to turn into that, but if he does, I think you're pretty happy if you're the Flames with the 16th overall pick.
100% you are. And look, I think part of it's also, I don't think he was the flashiest name on the board when the Flames drafted him at the time, right? And even since then, I think you always look at, whether it's right or not, I think you always look at what somebody else got, and you go, oh man, everyone's talking about Cal Ritchie because he got traded from the Avs to the Islanders and that Brock Nelson, and Frank Cervalli's had great things to say about Cal Ritchie and what he's going to be. And you go, oh, man, we could have had Cal Ritchie at that spot. Or mm-hmm. Axel Sandin Pelka's another guy. Wasn't he the next pick, I think, in that draft? And he's got really great reviews. So, right. But again, everybody goes at different paces and is in different systems. So it's not fair to Sam to sit here and go, well, you could have had this, or you could have done that. And yeah, I think for a lot of people, he wasn't the quote-unquote sexiest name available, wasn't the highest profile name available when he got drafted at 16.
Also fair. I think that's a good chunk of that. Yep. But Flames also didn't come out and say that, hey, he's going to be the best player in the draft. They didn't Mark Jankowski him.
Yeah, so that didn't work out well.
Yeah, that was a bit of a swing and a miss.
You mean comparing him to Joe Neuwendijk was a problem?
And In 10 years' time, he's going to be the best player from this draft class?
No.
Yeah, that was probably not Jay Feaster's best move. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Shan and Cam and Riley behind the scenes this hour And we've been coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.